On behalf of the Creation Care Alliance of Western North Carolina and Mountain True, the program that we are a part of, I give thanks and gratitude for you all this morning. I want to offer thanks for Peggy and for her work to get us here at this point in our experience together. And I want to offer thanks for the ways that you all, as a fellowship, offer leadership in Western North Carolina on issues of justice and creation care, and for the ways that Jim McKinley has offered his wisdom and leadership in through his work with Creation Care Alliance. So I'm very grateful for the Green Sanctuary movement that you're a part of, and so many other ways that you express your spirituality through action. So thank you. Before we begin, I'd love to offer and just say a little prayer, if that's all right. Would you join me if you feel called? Beautiful wisdom, spirit of love, creator, we ask that we might be nudged open in a new way this morning. We might have a new awareness of ourselves and of our neighbors, of creation and of spirit. I ask that my words will not get in the way of the work that's already happening in the hearts and minds and across the aisle here. Amen. We were at Hickory Knob State Park, just on the border of Georgia and South Carolina, and I dropped off my daughter and wife, and they were trudging along toward the banks of the Savannah River with these 35-pound backpacks on their backs. My son and I grabbed the lunches after we parked. We had the light load and followed them down to the docks there where they unfurled two paddle boards where that they inflated them and then placed them into the water. My son and I drug a couple of kayaks down to the edge of the water and began to get ready to push in. I had forgotten something, and so the three of them, the girls were on the paddle boards and Nicholas was on a kayak. They headed out as I ran back up to the car. They were floating along. I guess I was gone a little longer than I thought, because when I returned to the edge of the water to get into my kayak, I noticed that my kids were paddling around and playing towards the middle of this lake-looking space, and my wife was on the far end of the lake near this little cove, sitting down on her paddleboard. So I was a little curious about that and wondering, did a current grab her? Was it some sort of wind that I wasn't picking up on? What was happening? So I shoved out into the water and wasn't too concerned, but started to paddle in her direction and asked the kids to join me in that. It was a beautiful day like today as we were moving across the water fairly wildly, because we're not very experienced in this regard, and so we were splashing around, and as we got closer, I could see my wife waving her arms around, and so I thought, all right, well, maybe there's a whole like cloud of mosquitoes over there. I mean, it's just like making up things, like what's happening to her? Are there bees in the vicinity, and she's trying to swat them? What is happening? I know maybe there's horse flies. You know, it's just like trying to figure out. As we got closer, I was waiting to hear like screams, like help or, you know, anything. I couldn't quite get what was happening over there. And as we drew closer, I recognized that she was waving to us silently. And she was facing a pine tree, this big pine tree that was on the bank of the river there. And as we got closer, the kids and I recognized that we were to be quiet as well. And we were able to see that she was gazing up into a tree, kind of beckoning us. And it didn't take long for us to find what she was looking at, which was a great bald eagle. This creature was clothed in a deep brown, wearing a white hat and white tail. It was a sunburst of orange of a beak and these great talons holding on to the edge of the tree on the branch there. We could see as we paddled quietly toward my wife that she had been awestricken by this experience. And we spent maybe 10 minutes with this eagle. watching him, gaining access from different vantage points in the water, bobbing up and down with this creature, which I've since read, like maybe 10 pounds, maybe 2 feet high, a large animal that was looking at us, noticing us as well, each one of us in different ways. It was clearly a sacred moment of connections where these four bodies that were floating in the water were connecting to the body of creation and this eagle. The eagle never departed from the branch, even as we awkwardly splashed each other and paddled away. We couldn't hold on any longer than 10 minutes or so. My wife hung out for a little bit longer. The reading that we're exploring today comes from the Christian New Testament and from my faith tradition, and it's attributed to Paul. We don't know if Paul in the Christian faith actually wrote this letter, but we do have a sense that it's from his community. If it wasn't him, it has kind of his ideals and his general theology, and so we'll just say that it was Paul that wrote this letter. It's from Colossians 3:12-14. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with one another and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So a little bit about Paul and his context. You may know that he was a Jewish man from Tarsus. He was likely a Pharisee who had persecuted Christians in the early parts of his life. He had a conversion experience, which you may have heard of, on the road to Damascus, that turned him from a persecutor of Christians into a tenacious and interpreter of Christ. I don't agree with some of the things that Paul talks about, and it's very challenging, some of his wordings, and I'll just leave it at that. That's for another time. The passage we read this morning was part of a letter written sometime in the first century to a particular community of early Christians in Colossia, within present-day Turkey. It sought to straighten out some challenges from within the early church and also served as an encouragement about how to live life well in that particular city. Now, many people believe that Paul, during the time this was written, was in prison and that he had possibly written this letter, as well as a few others, from his cell or from his lockdown situation in prison. The situation that Paul found himself in is a reminder about those imprisoned today on this Labor Day weekend. You may know that the United States is home to 5% of the world's population and about 25% of the world's prisoners. There are many ways to explore interconnections about race, the criminal justice system, cheap or free labor, education, and economics. There are many movies out and books and different ways that you've engaged them, and I would imagine that you all have done that a lot here already. I had the opportunity to attend a Building Bridges race relations conversation in Asheville, and would recommend that if you're willing to make the trek 8 weeks in a row. It's a powerful course and has helped me deepen my awareness of the brokenness of many of our systems, as well as the incarceration system in the United States. We are in the middle of a time period when prisoners have gone on strike, beginning on August 21st and lasting until September 9th. Prisoners from about 17 different states are in the middle of a labor strike, essentially. It's in response to 7 deaths of incarcerated people at Lee Correctional Institute in South Carolina back in April. But it seeks to alleviate the inhumane treatment and condition faced by many prisoners. It's a labor strike of sorts, with about 10 demands that they ask, and a couple of them are these. Immediate improvements to the conditions of prisons and prison policies that recognize the humanity of imprisoned men and women. That's one of the 10. Treat us like humans. Another one is an immediate end to prison slavery, which is why I'm talking about this today on Labor Day weekend. About 800,000 prisoners go to work every day in our prison system for about 4 cents an hour in that system. And so exploring what is labor and how do we treat prisoners and who is profiting by that labor, these are questions that I wonder about on a day like today. Not only do we have this this prison system that is becoming more and more privatized, where people are making a lot of money off that, we also have a detention system that has a similar track record regarding immigration. The Washington Post recently shared that these two private prison firms, GEO Group and Core Civic, are facing human trafficking and forced labor lawsuits regarding allegations that they have forced immigrants, detainees, through the threat of solitary confinement and violence to wash bathrooms, to cook, to farm, to do hard labor for no compensation at all. Beyond the moral failure of this kind of system, it seems that as prisons and detention centers are touted normally as job creators in communities, that these particular entities are choosing to use labor from inmates for no compensation rather than increase local employment and the economy of that particular community. It seems that folks in this system, including myself, we continue to forget articles of Paul's suggested clothing. So often we have a hard time finding the right wardrobe when exploring things like our prison system or immigration or racism or healthcare or sexism or creation care or militarism or income inequality or hunger or poverty. There are a few of us who totally forget to get dressed at all. In many instances, Western Christianity has ignored this invitation of Paul. Even spiritually alive people have assimilated into the dominant culture like slipping into a luxurious hot tub of injustice. I don't want to be too racy around here on a Sunday morning, but it seems like we have a bunch of streakers running around this country right now because some folks are not clothed properly according to Paul. So confession time. Not about the streaking. It's really easy right now. It feels really easy to see the issues or the challenges or the brokenness in other people. Through Twitter feeds, through newsreels, through my neighborhoods and my family dinner table, I'm more easily able to find the faults of others. It seems that I can see clearly when others forget to wear compassion, kindness, or love. And when I spot it, how do I react? With compassion, kindness, or love? Not all the time. More often than not, I respond with my own version of disgust, with frustration, hopelessness, and despair. And I find myself wondering, is it possible to challenge injustice and to have compassion and love at the same time? And so I'm divided as a person. And maybe you feel that we're divided as a country or as communities. In fact, I'm a little uncomfortable talking about prison reform and immigration just in front of you, even though I know the kinds of folks that attend this kind of service are justice-seeking people. You see, these topics can be seen as divisive, along with a host of other words and topics, not to mention the proper nouns and names of folks that are being inflammatory these days. Do you notice that it feels a little divided? Our country? Is it just me? It could be just me. We're at the same time overly sensitive and desensitized to what is happening. It's a really weird time. So besides prison reform and labor and immigration, are there other things that you, I don't want you to start preaching, but just like a word that is a trigger word that you think is happening in our culture where even saying it out loud is uncomfortable for you. Like, you wouldn't want to bring this up at Thanksgiving meal because you know something's going to go down. You wouldn't really share this But here it's safe because we're just going to have a tight frame. You just say the word. You don't have to explain your position one way or the other. But what are some of those things? I have a list too, but can you just say them out loud?
Climate change.
Climate change.
Racism.
Sexism.
School to prison
highway for communities of color.
Civility.
Say that again.
Social.
Social value.
Militarism.
LGBT rights.
Education.
Coal.
What was that one?
Coal.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Free healthcare.
Healthcare. Free healthcare, yes. We have international dynamics like Iran, North Korea. If you start talking about those things, you might run into some gun reform, Me Too movement, University of North Carolina versus Duke. There's a lot of them. Recently, just a couple of days ago, even Asheville High School, my daughter just started at Asheville High School, and Hendersonville High School had this beautiful football game that ended really, Asheville lost, but it was an amazing thing, and I don't think that's as divisive as the rest of these things, but that can be. We're in a time when we're able to clearly see where and when injustice is happening. So there's a gift in this. We can see it clearly, right? It seems that it's easier to find enemies in this regard. That's the challenge. It's easier to find threats to democracy or to decency or to morality. Sometimes I find myself feeling a little superior or righteously angry about an issue, a person, a tweet, or a policy. I easily fall to the they are wrong and I am right kind of thinking, or eventually they'll come around to my way of thinking. While I believe it is time for intentionally compassionate action in the face of hatred and unbridled fear-mongering at the expense of human lives, I also believe that how we take compassionate action matters greatly, and that faith communities are at the heart of that part of this conversation. It seems we are losing the ability to find awe in nature and one another, that we are losing the capacity for awe and curiosity in the other. Along with that powerful list of clothing items that Paul suggests for that early church, I might add something else for 2018, a coat of curiosity. Or I really would imagine it as a cape of curiosity because it's more fun. I can fly with it a little bit. In 2016, my daughter was learning about democracy in her class and about civics. And we had one of the presidential candidates. We had two, and we went to both. But the second one was the Trump rally down at the Civic Center, the U.S. Cellular Center. And I was curious, like, what is this all about? Like, if I pretended that I didn't know what I know, what would it be like for us to walk into this space and to listen? And for me to be an honest member of this society, how do I do that well? I don't know if that was right or wrong, but we were doing it. So my son was in fourth grade at that time. My daughter was in seventh grade at that time. And we got tickets to the Trump rally. And we parked, and we could see the throngs of people outside. Some were waiting to get in. Others were protesting. And they had quarantined off the protest side behind these metal barriers. And we were walking along kind of where the ticket area, if you've ever been up there, and walking in with some other folks. I didn't wear anything one way or the other. Like, I did not want to tip my hand like who I was in this scenario. I have my two kids with me. I didn't want any trouble. I'm just, like, curious. So we walked in, or actually, we were walking in through the gauntlet, the people who I would imagine think more like me, the protesters, were screaming at us and were yelling at me and flipping off my children and screaming, shame, shame, shame on you. A man came from behind the barricade and started chasing us as we were walking in to the building. This is 2016, before the election had happened. I turned around. I was at a heightened place of fear. And I thought I could probably take the guy, I'll be honest with you. No, I haven't really been in a fight at all, but I was not that afraid, knowing there are police folks all around. And I just said, "What are you doing?" And he said, he was screaming shame, and my kids were just like glued to me, like totally terrified. And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm taking my kids in to learn about democracy, and one of the presidential candidates is in my town. They don't always come around here. I want to teach them about democracy." And he said, "Oh, well, I'm a civics teacher at the school down the street." And he started talking to me about like how I love to teach kids about democracy and all this stuff while he had just finished screaming at us. So then he stepped away and went back behind the thing, and my kids were traumatized. We walk in, we go through the security gates, and inside it's traumatizing too because of all the security dynamics. We get to the floor of the bottom part of the Civic Center, and people are dressed differently in this space than they were outside. Less signs, different kinds of signs, different kinds of hats, and the person of the hour came out and began to speak, and less about policy and more commentary about what's happening outside and inside. It was more like I don't want to say anything that gets me in trouble. Like, look at me. Okay, so generally you can imagine. Like, it was like, look at that guy. That's the best that they can send us. And then everyone would boo that person because, and then somebody would be, a protester would unfurl, sneak attack. Hey, I got in and I have this sign that says boo. And then everyone boos them and the security comes to get them out. So the whole time was spent booing different people. And so my daughter comes over and says, my son says to me, can we leave? I'm afraid, my fourth grader. And it's been about 20 minutes, and I said to Liv, like, I think, have you heard enough? Like, do you feel like, I mean, he did say some things about veterans and some different things. Have you felt like you've heard enough so you can do your report? And she said, I have heard enough, but I don't want to leave. And I said, well, why don't you want to leave? She said, I'm scared to go back out there. I don't want to be outside with them, so I'd rather blend in with the folks that are here, and then when we go out, we'll kind of sneak back to our car. And so we didn't feel safe outside of the building, and we didn't feel safe inside of the building, and so what were we to do? We ended up, we made a plan, we got to the front of the line, and we snuck out right at the beginning, and that's when people were just on the outside of the building, double fists flipping us off, screaming at us even more, and we were able to escape before the rest of the group came out from the cellular center. So Liv learned about democracy. I wonder, since then, like, what would have happened in the midst of that if somebody from either side that was presented had said to my son or daughter, are you okay? Like, if from behind the barricade, someone had come over and said, this must be really scary for you. Are you doing okay? Can I walk with you to the front so these folks aren't as scary? Or tell me about you. What school do you guys go to? Or if we had come inside and somebody with a MAGA hat had come up and said, you guys look really terrified. Do you want to sit next to us? Like, how would my children have perceived these crowds of people if compassion had been worn, if kindness had been worn by either side? And I know these are they're amazing people inside and outside of this building. But I wonder how my experience would have been different. What if there had been one courageous, curious defector from either of the factions? Could we hear this kind of clothing or this kind of spirit speaking through the tongues, visions, dreams, or can we only hear the headlines, the tweets, the echo chambers of our own people that we hang around from the safe bunkers of our spiritual isolation? Maybe before we can approach the other for meaningful conversation or right relationship, we have to cultivate curiosity, a wonder, like our family found in the river, gathered around the sacred space of a great eagle, or for the rest of creation, including our human neighbors. According to Paul, how we treat bodies, this is his clothing imagery, the attitudes and characteristics we wrap around bodies is of vital importance. Put on compassion, he says, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, forgiveness, just as you have been forgiven. Overall, put on love, which binds all of these characteristics together. But he was encouraging this not just to help provide a theological framework and a spiritual practice for these individuals living in the first century. He was inviting the early followers of Jesus to remember and respond to God's love instead of attempting to earn the love of others and God. Beyond this individualistic piety, Paul knew what might happen when whole communities of people were wearing the right outfit. You guys know this part. When they put on compassion, humility, gentleness, patience, forgiveness, and love, a community like that would be beautifully whole and just. They would have appeared distinct in their city for the ways that they behave, not just for their beliefs, but in their behavior. Among them, the most vulnerable would have been cared for, the sick, the poor, the very young and very old. Amazing things would have happened for newcomers and the more experienced among them. But this glimpse of heaven would not be contained only in this house church. Because when one person is wearing compassion, they clothe others with compassion. When another is donning their finest kindness threads, they find others are able to be kind as well. In my work with the Creation Care Alliance, it's perceived that I mostly think about faith communities and how they treat the body of water called the French Broad River, or the bodies of songbirds, black bears, and salamanders in western North Carolina, or that I just think about the body of our earth, the thin atmospheric blanket that is being shifted due to climate change. But the reality is that our network of congregations seek right relationship with all bodies of creation. We have found that how we treat the bodies of earth is how we treat our neighbors, particularly those most vulnerable among us. Now, what would it look like to clothe all bodies with compassion and love? Immigrant bodies, bald eagle bodies, black and brown bodies, the bodies of the Pacific and Atlantic, and on and on and on. You may remember that James Cone, the black theologian from Union Theological Seminary, has passed away in April and was an advocate for anti-racism work and a huge mind and heart in this work. He speaks to this deep connection about bodies, human bodies, and the creation. When he says the logic that led to slavery and segregation in the Americas, colonization and apartheid in Africa, the rule of white supremacy throughout the world is the same one that leads to the exploitation of animals and the ravaging of nature. Cone goes on to say that the fight for justice cannot be segregated, but must be integrated with the fight for life in all of its forms. Here at the UU Fellowship of Hendersonville, you are seeking to clothe yourselves well, to live into right relationship with spirit, with neighbors, yourselves, and creation. So friends, may you reflect love with your clothing. May you clothe yourself and others with compassion, with kindness, with humility, with gentleness, with patience, forgiveness, and over all, put on love, which binds you together. And don't forget the Cape of Curiosity.